All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome. This is a regularly scheduled meeting of the Land Use Committee. Actually, not regularly scheduled. It's a Thursday instead of a Tuesday, but it is regular. I'm the Vice Chair of the Committee, Greg Schwartz, Councilor-at-Large for Ward 6. And I'll be standing in until the Chairman arrives. He's going to be a little bit late. Just to introduce the committee members who are here. On my right is Jacob Akbos, from Councilor-at-Large from Ward 2. We have James Cody, Councilor-at-Large from Ward 3, Deborah Crossley, Councilor-at-Large from Ward 5, and Jay Harney, Ward Councilor from Ward 4. We also have staff here tonight, Nadia Khan from the Clerk's Office, Mike Gleba from the Planning Department, Rita Young from the Legal Office, the Executive Legal Office, and Bob Waddock, also from the Legal Office. We're going to do a couple things tonight that might be relatively brief. So if you have your agendas in front of you, we're going to get started. But if you're here for the Dalby Street item, we'll try to move that up as soon as the counselor from Ward 1, President Lennon, arrives. Okay? So we want to be sensitive to your desires and needs. Okay? So up until that point, we'll just go through the agenda as printed. Okay? So first item on our docket is item 2017, special permit to extend non-conforming use in FAR 85 Fuller Terrace. I believe is the petitioner or petitioner's attorney here? No? Okay. Terry's in the back. Terry, are you Fuller? Protest, are you going to come forward and request withdrawal? Item 2017.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe that the committee members have all received a copy of the withdrawal letter, which I believe is self-explanatory. In summary, I think my client was moved by the remarks not only of the neighbors but also by certain members of the Land Use Committee, including the acting chairman, and as a result is withdrawing the petition and is going to proceed with the construction of an addition for a single-family home. But I think more importantly, he took to heart the words, the recommendation that it not be built to the max. He's already reached out to the principal abutter on the left-hand side and redesigned the building in a way that reduces the mass facing that side of the house, and I think that's it, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you very much, Attorney Morris. If there's a request to withdraw, that without prejudice, I assume? With prejudice? Okay. Councilor Cody.
Thank you, Mr. Acting Chair. So I have a question for our legal department. So as the counselor from Ward 3, I just have a question on this particular situation. So they're requesting that we vote it, that we withdraw it with prejudice. And what would be the difference between with and without prejudice on this case?
If the withdrawal is with prejudice, well, actually, if the withdrawal has not been granted leave to withdraw without prejudice, it means that the same petition or a very similar petition cannot be refiled within a period of, I believe, 2 years. And you can vote on it if you want to, but this petitioner is absolutely entitled to withdraw, and the only relief he'd really want to get would be without prejudice. And if he's not choosing to do that, if you do decide to vote on the withdrawal, you should make it clear that it's with prejudice at the request of the applicant.
Okay, thank you.
So to clarify, thank you, Attorney Young. So you're saying we don't need to vote on this because there's no additional relief that he's requesting as far as without prejudice. It's just withdrawing it.
Acting on it might make it cleaner so that there's no question of a constructive grant, but if you do act on it, you should do it with prejudice and note that it's because that's at the request of the applicant.
Okay. Do I have a motion?
I move it.
All right. Motion's been made by James Cody to allow withdrawal with prejudice. All those in favor? That's 2, 4, 5, 5, 2. All those opposed? It's unanimous. 5-0. All right, great. Is anybody here for 129 Cabot Street? If you are, I just want to tell you that this has been postponed to May 9th. Okay? So if you're here for item 1917, that's the special permit for the garage at 129 Cabot Street, that will not be taken up tonight. That'll be taken up on May 9th. Great. Okay. It doesn't look like there's anybody here for that. All right. So moving right along to item 6217, special permit to extend the non-conforming use at 489-491 Commonwealth Avenue. To read it into the record, Ronald Gold, petition for a special permit site plan approval to raise and replace the existing non-conforming two-family dwelling with attached garage, further extending the non-conforming front and side setbacks in 489-491 Commonwealth Avenue, Ward 7. Petitioner's representative here.
Yes.
Please introduce yourself and give your name and address for the record.
Mr. Chairman, good evening. Good evening, members. My name is Jonathan Gold, and I am the attorney for the petitioner, Ronald Gold, who is the manager of the 489-491 Commonwealth LLC, who is the record owner of the property.
Oh, I think it is on. Okay. I got to lean forward. Has anyone heard me?
Also with us this evening is David Baronke of the Slocum Hall Design Group, the project architect, and Vern Porter, the project engineer and the surveyor. The proposal before you this evening is a request for a special permit to replace an existing non-conforming two-family dwelling at 489 Commonwealth with a new two-family structure. The premises are located in an SR2 zone. The existing structure will be raised pursuant to a demolition permit, and the proposed new two-family structure will otherwise meet all of the current zoning requirements, dimensional requirements. Late today, we received a report from the city engineer, and Mr. Porter is here to answer any questions you may have around that. I also note, and I missed your opening remarks, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, but I also note that at least in the advertisement, the requested relief was greater than they're replacing the existing use, two-family use, with another non-conforming two-family use. There are no dimensional relief for dimensional. There are no requests for dimensional relief being made here. The new structure will fully meet all of the dimensional requirements. At this time, I'll introduce Ronald Gold, who will speak directly for the project, and will be able to present to you the PowerPoint you see in front of you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I am Ron Gold. I am the managing partner for 489 through 491 Commonwealth Avenue. And I do appreciate the opportunity to stand before you this evening and present our project, which we are excited about, and we hope you are. As noted, our application is to raise an existing two-family dwelling and replace it with a new structure that will meet or exceed all current building and zoning codes and the energy code, with the sole exception being that we are in an SR2 zone, which is a single-family district, and we are proposing a continuation of the two-family use. The existing house, which was built in 1922, has been a two-family since that time, and that is 95 years that the land has supported this two-family use. We're requesting to raise the structure and build a new structure because the current building, which I think in the PowerPoint we do have a couple of photographs, if we could advance, there we go. The current building is in really horrible physical condition. It has an inadequate foundation. It's settled into the ground. And it would take extraordinary measures to take this house, rehabilitate it, and reuse it. Certainly for the two-family use, or really for any kind of use. It's also had many, many insensitive additions that have been conducted over the years. Unfortunately, many of them were done on a budget, and generally the house is no longer representative of what it was originally. For the project, I went into the neighborhood and I looked at other similar uses, i.e., the two-family uses in the immediate neighborhood, and there's approximately 15, or there actually, I believe, is 18 if you count the reference points of two-family homes in the immediate neighborhood, all of which are visible from this property. The design of our new structure, if you could please toggle back to the new house. One more. Or the color photo. There we go. The design of the new house, we feel, is sensitive to the surroundings. The gambrel is an architectural element that's repeated in the neighborhood. We feel that this won't dominate the streetscape. It's a two-story building. It has great side, rear, front yard setback. Certainly meets what the requirements are under the current zoning code. And our architect worked very hard on this house to make it appear that it is, in fact, a single-family home when it's cleverly two units. On the lower slide, on the left, you can see that there's a gambrel roof looking at you, and to the right of that is a garage. We've pushed the garage back as far as we can on the site. I prefer not to see the garage prominent, so that's why it's pushed back, and I also know that that's not a preferred type of design. If you look at the top left slide, or the top right slide, you're looking at the Westbourne Road point of view, and that's the other unit. So from Commonwealth Avenue, it appears to be a single-family home. But in fact, this is designed as two units. We feel that since the current zoning is SR2, we could build a large house on this site. It's approximately 21,000 square feet. That would be a very good-sized home. But we feel that the continued use of the property as a two-family is reasonable and consistent with the neighborhood, but also addresses a rising national trend for a slightly smaller and somewhat more affordable housing units in premium locations. Admittedly, these will not be cheap units, but in comparison to that large single-family house that we could build as of right, they will be much more sharply priced. We're committed to Newton. We've been working here for around 7 years. In that time, we renovated and built from the ground up a variety of homes, and I'm proud to say that two of them have received recognition from Historic Newton. In closing, I believe that this proposal was no more detrimental in any way, shape, or form than the existing non-conforming building, and that the continued use of the land as a two-family house is not detrimental in any way to the neighborhood. I believe that the new structure will enhance the streetscape for all, and especially along Westbourne Street, where currently, and unfortunately, I don't have an existing photograph of this, but there's a four-car garage that dominates that entire view of our property. In closing, I also have listed some of the public benefits, and we will be curing existing encroachments. The front of the existing house is actually in the setback. The new house will not be. The new structure will meet all the setback and side yard requirements. Currently, there's no drainage on this site, and there is some sheet runoff to our abutters. We are using a structured engineered system. We will control the runoff on site. The gutters and the driveway will all be connected to the drainage system. Again, the new house has been scaled to blend into the neighborhood, and I think aesthetically will be an enhancement. And we are improving the access to the property along Westbourne Road. There's a very long curb cut. We're going to reduce that down to the minimum that will support two cars. And there'll be another ingress egress along Commonwealth Avenue. And lastly, we also have been careful in our landscape plan. If you could toggle to the landscape, please. Here we go. We've also been careful to try and use, where we can, native plants, trees, and shrubs, which personally I feel is an important way of landscaping and will enhance the site and also provide some shelter and food, berries, etc., for some wildlife in the neighborhood. And lastly, we're replacing the unsightly house with structural issues with a new house. We're offering, once again, smaller housing options, new housing options in Newton. We're going to have energy-efficient construction. Last but not least, if you face the existing house, if you could go back to the existing, please. hard to see from this photograph, but on the far right, on Avondale, there's a new house that somewhat towers over this house, the existing house. We're going to be pushing this house to the left, which will open up the space between the house on Avondale and this house, the new construction, rather. Thank you.
Great, thank you very much. Do you have any further presentation, or would you like us to move on to the planning department? Okay. We're going to take public comment after the planning department, okay? Thank you. Michael?
All right. Well, as has been said, this is a special permit to extend an existing non-conforming two-family use. So this is the course of relief. The criteria the council needs to consider is whether the proposed extension should be non-conforming two-family use will not be substantially more detrimental than the existing non-conforming use is to the neighborhood. We have some information in the consensus. Here's an aerial view of the existing property that Tom has on the bottom, the west one on the right-hand side, showing the existing house and grounds, and some further pictures of the existing structure, some of what we've just seen. Some from there, again, the site plan, showing the location of the new house, as well as the grading on the site. Here's some elevations, again, similar to what we've just seen, just not in elevation form, but how the high position can come out of it, with anything from the right hand side and ground it, and some of the reverse form mode. Some different elevations from the north, as well as the east elevation, have the same from abutting properties. And again, the landscaping plan, this one with now colors, is black and white, showing extensive landscaping along the property lines, including the coming up avenue.
Thank you, Michael. So, at this point in time, if there's anyone here to speak on this from the public, is the gentleman on the left there, anybody else? Alright, sir, if you could just state your name and address for the record, and then we'll take your comments. Try to keep them to 3 minutes or less if you can.
Good evening, that will be easy. My name is James McGinley, and I am the co-owner with my wife of 150 Eastbourne, the principal abutter. A few points. One concern I have is that the elevation is proposed to be raised a very substantial amount, which will, perhaps you can see the back line of the property. It is proposed that a wall will be built 2 feet back from my property, which is much appreciated. 3 feet 7 inches in height, which seems to me to be a little bit higher than needed to permit the runoff. A tremendous amount of soil will be brought in any event. I think, 3 feet or 2.7 feet would hopefully do it, as opposed to 3 feet 7, a new wall against my property line. Second, and I spoke today with the public works engineer, and he advised that this was a matter for inspectional services later. I realize it perhaps isn't for this group, but the soil conditions there are difficult, as Mr. Ronald Gold mentioned. The existing property has settled so that the basement in the current property is not usable and will have to be replaced. That will be a difficulty that will confront construction. I know I had to add some, we added small space and we had to put in some piers. And if that is not for this group, then presumably at the permit level, inspectional services will address that. Finally, I can appreciate that considerable work and thought has gone into this project, and I would only suggest, my guess is that the Golds would rather be in sooner rather than later. I'm assuming there's limited basis of objection, and so the sooner that this is approved, albeit with, I would ask for a reduction in the back wall, the better. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So I just trying to address the concerns. From what I understand, and correct if I'm wrong, that retaining wall that's 3.7 or 3 feet 7 inches high is not in, it's not above 4 feet, so I think by the zoning code we don't have control over that. That said, you certainly, I think, should talk a little bit more. We would encourage the two of you to, you and the petitioner, try to work that out. That's a very reasonable, I'm sure they want to try to work out something with you.
I would hope so. I perhaps
encourage you to talk maybe
later today.
Sure. Have you already had some discussions?
Only very generally and very briefly. No, so, I should extend them, of course.
Sounds like you might want to speak to respond to that, which I think we'll take just for this one time. But before we get to that, the other issue with the you asked about the settling and the piers, that would be something that would be not a part of our purview, except if it were in the construction plan. We have sometimes a condition in the board order that states that, you know, part of the construction management plan needs to be approved. So if you're concerned about kind of some of the environmental effects of taking out that basement or whatever it is, we can certainly put those in as a condition.
I don't know that it's appropriate as a condition. I simply identify that if you're going to build on that soil a two-family house.
Just wait a second. What I'm saying is that if there's concerns about construction, kind of the times, the manner, making sure that the construction is done in a suitable way, we always do put that in as a condition.
Understood.
So that might address some of your concerns.
Thank you.
Okay. And I'm not sure that it's necessary for us to hear from you right now. Perhaps if you guys could speak offline with the neighbor, that would be helpful. Okay, thank you. Comments from the counselors or questions from the counselors? I guess. Counselor Crossley. Do you like the design? What about the energy efficiency? Is it okay?
No data. So, I think this is a very thoughtful project and addresses a lot of concerns. I wasn't going to have very much at all to say except a little aside to the planning department about not making up styles of architecture. it's called an altered colonial. I don't think that's a type. Anyway,
altered,
yeah, the existing building. So it certainly has been altered, and this is certainly a lovely improvement on what exists, and I understand why you would choose to have new construction. I wonder, though, since the abutter, who I assume is to the north of the retaining wall, your 2-foot offset, and you have a lot of existing plantings there, so I actually do have a question about that. Is 2 foot enough to protect those the root basis of the various trees and so forth that you're keeping along those lines? I see that the retaining wall is veering hugely to protect that maple at the front at the street. But so, and I'm asking this in part too because if the abutter is concerned about the height of the wall, even though the wall would give him privacy, certainly, you know, planted berm would give him a lot of privacy as well. Do you need to have that wall quite that high?
From my perspective, no. But it's Mr. Gold's question, I think.
I don't know whose question it is.
I'm sorry. Have I missed?
Councilor Crossley, did you want me to direct the question to the speaker?
Sure. That seemed to be what was happening.
Okay. Go ahead.
Why don't you speak? Could you speak to the degree to which you are raising the grade, and what it is? You know, why you're needing to do that and whether you could slightly alter that. Who is the petitioner?
I can respond to that.
Yeah, oh yeah, no, I'm not asking the fellow who was just speaking. I get it. I'm asking the petitioner if there is an alternative or a modification that you.
Let me just clarify for you. Okay. So what Councilor Coffey, I think, is asking is, you know, are you going to adjust the grade to take into account the roots, the root structure of those plantings?
I'm sorry. It's not exactly the grade. The location of the
location of the wall
is right up against those trees that you're calling out as existing to be saved.
Okay, just for the record, my name is Vern Porter. I'm a land surveyor, civil engineer working on the project. The wall is actually kept back 4 feet from the property line for that exact reason, so that we can not cut some of those roots. There are a mixture of plants that are there that will be helpful to help screen what we're doing. The reason the wall is as high as it is, right now this whole backyard, all the water actually goes into this gentleman's yard. So the wall is designed for a height to allow us to have those swales. If you look at the site plan, it shows swales that go from all along the property line and out to drainage that's by Westbourne Road. Westbourne.
Mm-hmm.
The reason it's that high is so that we can make sure that we have a constant flow. And we could probably reduce the wall slightly, maybe 6 inches, and still maintain that flow. But the reason we did that is right now, it's very clear that the water goes into his backyard. So we were raising it up to keep the water out of his yard and actually going to, if it goes anywhere, it's going to go to Westbourne Terrace rather than into his yard. So that's the reason the wall is very high, and it is kept back to protect the roof.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I understand. Someone said 2 feet, and I looked at all those plantings and trees, and I thought that was a little tight.
Great. Okay. And that was the... Is that the issue that you had, Michael?
In the engineering report we received today, they did point out a concern about the tree roots near the new driveway in Con Ave.
Mr. Porter, do you want to address that?
I know that it's Jonathan Gold again. I know that we saw that late today, and I think that I don't think he's spoken yet to Mr. Welch, but we'll certainly be doing that and working out a plan that at least making the cut, if it doesn't compress and the roots, at least have some mitigation plan in place that will satisfy everybody.
Okay. So what we might do is, I think, if we do receive a motion to close the public hearing and move on with working on the board order, we might just make it clear that you'll have that discussion before we vote on this as a full council.
That's acceptable.
Okay. All right, so are there any other questions from the councilors? Is there a motion to close the public hearing? It being your ward, the chair closes, okay. All those in favor of closing the public hearing? So it's 5-0. Great. So we have a board or draft board order?
We do.
Great. Great, thank you. We have a motion for approval. Let's go through it.
So these are your proposed findings. They are the same as what was in your packet from Friday, with the exception of this in red, which was added just to add some numbers to the findings. If you can open the findings,
I think we can all read them first. Okay. If it's number one, anybody have any comments among our colleagues? No, that looks fine to me as well. Number two, public benefit of the sidewalk. Okay. You want to move on? That's fine with us. Three, so nothing different there. So as far as the construction management plan, what is the usual text of that? I mean, do we need to make any adjustments to that given the concerns? No? I'm getting a shake of the head from Attorney Young. Okay. Just to reassure the public, the gentleman who made the comment, but our standard construction plan condition, I think, will address your concerns as far as construction. Okay? Yes, Councilor Crossley.
Acting Chairman, we did get a couple of engineering reports today, and honestly, I scanned them because it was late in the day.
Yep.
I can't recall if it was this one or the one for Dalby Street, so please excuse me, but one of them said that there was going to be a lot of disturbance of the sidewalk around the site.
That's Dalby.
That was Dalby Street?
Yeah.
Okay. then no issue with that then.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes. Councilor Laredo.
I did note that in the report there was some suggestion moving the drainage from one side to the other. Is that something that was addressed by the petitioner or the supporter? You see that from Mr. Dagman's report?
I did see Mr. Dagman's report. And that was just that one unit that's right there. That unit could be moved, but I think I can maybe reconfigure it so it's not as deep.
I'm comfortable if it's that's something you can work through with our city engineer.
Absolutely. It's something we can easily maintain.
I don't know if we need a condition or put it on second call.
You feel more comfortable with that? I mean, either way, I think...
I don't think so. I mean, I think you know, Mr. Dagman knows where to find you and you know where to find him.
Yeah, I'm sure we can work that out. It's not a big deal. It's only one small piece of the drainage.
Okay.
It doesn't even need to be there. I put it there as like a belt and suspenders type of thing, and I'm sure I can reconfigure it so that it can stay there. This won't be as large as it is.
And I'm comfortable approving as is, understanding that there's some concern, Mr. McGinley's part, and if there's some offline discussion, they want to reduce the retaining wall by some amount. I don't think, at least I would have no objection to that. Obviously, I would not be okay with any increase in the amount.
Okay, we'll make a note of that. Okay. Given that, there's a motion to approve. All those in favor? All right, 6-0. Great. Gentlemen, sir, you don't have to come to... This will be taken up at the full council meeting Tuesday, this coming Tuesday. So you can be present in the audience. There won't be an opportunity to speak, but you can certainly be present if you want. Otherwise, no need. You can also watch it on TV.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members of the board.
Coaching a girls' soccer team. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair, for taking over. Next item on the record is 19-17. Is that being... We postponed it already? Okay, fine. So then our next item, we have two items, and did we deal with the timing issue yet or not? The last item? So we're going to do that last? Okay. All right, so 431-16 is a special permit petition to allow three attached dwellings at 377 Langley Road. I'll note for the record that we've now heard this matter a couple of times. We've had a site visit, or multiple site visits. Attorney Morris, if there's anything new you want to tell us, please do so. And then I think, frankly, we ought to get right to deliberation on this, close the public hearing, deliberate, and take our vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Terry Morris. I'm an attorney with the Office of 57 Elm Road, Newtonville, and I'm here representing the petitioner on this matter. In deference to your request, Mr. Chairman, I would like to point out there are several new developments on this front. As a result of the several site visits, I say that because several members came at different times, I think the one common theme was that the concern about the potential threat to the hillside, the wooded hillside. So our response to that, Mr. Chairman, essentially is to offer the city a preservation restriction, and I did circulate copies of that by email to all members of the committee, the two Ward 6 councilors, the city staff, the law department, and as well as the neighbors for whom we had email. I do have the clerk has copies just in case you want to discuss that any further. But what I proposed also was a proposed condition that would reference this document and attach this particular draft to the board order and allow for it to be tweaked if, in fact, it's necessary to comply with various procedural or formalities. But substantively, you have in front of you what we're proposing. Essentially, what it does is it keeps the property in its current state, allows no activity of any sort. Anything about removal of trees has to be approved by the tree warden. And we think this goes a long way, at least we hope it does, and we will demarcate the entire parcel. One of the wrinkles on this, Mr. Chairman, is, as you know, Much has been said about the master plan for this, even though it was it is subject 377 is subject to the petition, that it is part of a master plan involving by right two family houses at 367 and 373. I believe that you, Mr. Chairman, that had expressed a desire, you had wished that this had come before us all in one package. And I can report to you that, and I know that there was some struggling with the idea of what public benefits there might be for this project. You all have, on your desk, you would have received this landscape plan, proposed master plan with a landscaping plan. You will note that, in fact, the subject site, we're talking about this area of the Wooded Hillside, which is subject to this petition, but we are proposing as an additional inducement to a finding that this is indeed in the public interest, that we are going to now include the entire slope, which includes area that is located on the adjacent lot, 367. We hope that the committee will find this as an additional benefit. The other thing we're pleased to report is that we have indeed reduced the size of the building down to 0.41 FAR, which, as you know, were this to be a two-family house, it could be built at 0.41. I did submit a memo also to the committee, and I won't repeat what's in it. It clearly establishes what I believe should be the proper context for evaluating the true size of this building in relationship to the context as it's laid out in the zoning. So as a result, we are pleased to report these two recent developments, Mr. Chairman, and we trust that you will receive them in the spirit with which they have been offered. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Attorney Morris. Is there any member of the public who wishes to be heard on this petition? Come forward, please, sir. Good evening. Your name and address.
Could you make sure that you speak into the microphone, please?
Thank you, sir. Sir, thank you. Anyone else who wishes to be heard? Public hearing? All right. I'm going to entertain a motion to close. Attorney Morris? You need to speak. The microphone is not working properly. Or
thank you. Boris may not have seen the plan that you have which I distributed to you. We have addressed that concern, and we would agree to a condition. We wanted to be a condition that would allow the modification to that landscape plan to suit their interests. We're entirely open to that, so there's no issue there.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to entertain a motion to close the public hearing at this point. A motion by Councilor Schwartz. All in favor of closing the public hearing? Councilor Harney? 6 in favor, none opposed. The public hearing is closed. Do I have any questions before I take a motion to act on this petition? Do I have questions or comments? Councilor Schwartz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering if the legal department might be able to comment on this preservation restriction and any aspects to it that we need to know about.
I don't think they've seen it before, right? Have you had a chance to review this, Mr. Waddock?
I guess how unusual is this? How do we do this? Do we have other properties that we've done this with? Is this something that we can work with as a city?
As Attorney Morris and I did discuss this today, what I explained and what we think we can do is what would be called a non-statutory restriction. There are two different types of restriction. If it's a conservation restriction or a restriction that needs to be done in perpetuity, that would require an approval through one of the state agencies. That's not what we're anticipating on doing here. It's just a deed restriction. It would be for a period of 99 years. So it does require some modification with respect to the form. The substance that's included is within the discretion of the committee and the council. I believe that the substance that's in the proposed restriction is in response to concerns that were raised and incorporated by Attorney Morris. So I don't have any particular comments with respect to the substance. With respect to the form, it will require some modification, but it's doable, and we can modify the form and get it on record.
Well, let me be clear. Attorney Waddock has noted that tomorrow is Good Friday. Monday is a legal holiday. We meet on Tuesday evening in the full council. I don't think we're going to have something, certainly not in our packets, on this. I'm concerned about trying to put this on for Tuesday night without Attorney Waddock having had adequate opportunity to review it and send his comments over to us. So we can discuss it this evening, but I'm not prepared to get it to the full council to vote Tuesday night.
I would just comment that I'm happy to see this. It's a very nice development, I think that there's a lot to be said for it. And I guess I had a question about it. In addition to preventing cutting down without the arborist's allowance, or at least an assessment of a tree for its appropriateness, as well as building in that area, it mentions for passive recreation. I assume that's for the folks living on the property.
There's no allowance for passive recreation other than scenic.
Okay. Yeah, because it also says no public access, so it's
right.
For the members.
We didn't want to invite either the homeowners or the public on the site because we're trying to keep it in its natural state.
Okay. So you view this as being kind of not an area that the folks living on that site would go into on a regular basis?
No, in fact, as part of the restriction, you'll see we've done a post sign to that effect. That's in the proposed restriction.
Okay.
And we would put it in this entire thing is going to be covered by a homeowners association, and it will be included in that documentation as well.
Okay. Thank you for explaining that.
Did you want to say something in Councilor Cody?
Yes, I'm pleased with the developments also, certainly in terms of responsiveness to some of the concerns. In a minute, I wonder if the planning department can speak to the reduction in FAR, which I understand has happened. My understanding is that the reduction in FAR brings the building into what would be required if it were only a two-family home, which is something I normally ask for anyway, because it just seems right if we're going to work with FAR and allow more structures. So I'd just like to wonder if Mr. Gleba can comment on that. And so I had a long talk with Jennifer Steele about this, because when I was on the site, like everybody else, there was a discussion of the wooded area and how important it was. And then we started hearing from the neighbors about how important it is. And I sent you all what she wrote, because I said, could you give me some language, you know? And the things that stuck in my head were about the degree to which you leave the place alone. So the only thing on this that I wonder if we could get some clarification on is number 3, alteration. The way this is written, I think it's not entirely clear what latitude the association will have with taking out trees. Nothing contained herein shall prohibit grantor from removing any trees that have fallen or been uprooted due to natural causes. Diseased and dying by the tree warden is clear. But the reason that's not clear is what the conservationists say is when the tree falls from natural causes, you leave it. Now, if it falls and it's leaning and it's dangerous, then you want to be able to lay it down or something. So this is the only language that I would request get reviewed by our senior environmental planner or whomever, to make sure that we're not opening the door for somebody coming in to clean up the woods, you know, because then you're really not conserving it. Other than that, I'm not sure why we couldn't vote this on second call, because it's really pretty far along, assuming the FAR calculation is approved by the planning department.
Sorry.
Councilor probably pretty much covered. I was going to ask about the tree piece and all that, so I'm good.
Anyone else? So let me ask the planning department and maybe the petitioner, if a tree is diseased or falls in the woods. Yeah, I know. I knew somebody was going to get there. Thank you. Is there a process for replacing those trees? Does that actually make sense or not? I'm certainly not enough of an expert on conservation lands to comment on that. Someone, Mr. Gleba, do you know that?
Enough to make sure I know what it would mean to replace a tree that falls in natural areas.
I guess what I'd ask is that Mr. Watt, if you or Mr. Gleba consult with Ms. Steele about the language here and what's the appropriate standards. I mean, I think Councilor Crosley had a concern about opening it up to some kind of cleanup, so to speak, which might be at odds with the purpose of a conservation type easement.
If you could just look at this language, I mean, there's the legal side of it and not wanting it to be an actual conservation restriction, so there's no state oversight, but then there's the practical side of it, which is, I think, what we're trying to achieve.
No, I understand that. So, as I understand it, Mr. Gleba, have you had an opportunity to look at the FAR submission?
So, we received the current FAR calculation sheet today. So, those I was able to show as quickly as I have done officers who do not disagree with the methodology, but I think the petition can better explain what the difference is and what caused the previous inconsistency.
Morris, do you want to try to explain what the difference is?
I'm sorry, if you could repeat that, Mr. Gleba.
So, I think that we do receive the truth today, and I do so as quickly as our zoning officer who did not disagree with anything she said, but I thought that we would be in a better position to explain what the previous inconsistency
is.
When we first proposed the project, it was at 0.46 FAR. At the time, I believe I stated in the very first hearing, I thought there was an anomaly in the ordinance because there was an area below the slab of the garages that had been counted in the FAR, which should not have been counted. Because if you look at the ordinance, it says mass below the first story, and it defines what mass is. So when we revised it down to 0.435, my client, acting conservatively, took out some portion of that. What we did since then was I consulted with our engineer, and we actually calculated and gave the formula to Mr. Gleba on a sheet in which we calculated exactly how much square footage below the mass should be counted, and we included that on the...
You gave it to him today?
What?
You gave it to him today?
I had given him that today, yes, but I had spoken to him about it 2 days ago.
I'm just going to say, in fairness, I really want our staff to have an opportunity to get things in advance and renew things in advance. I know this is a process that's kind of moving, but I'm very reluctant to... Not doubting what you're providing, but I'm really reluctant when we get this stuff, and Mr. Kluber's got 3 hours to prepare, and he's supposed to talk to the zoning people. It's not fair to him, frankly. Go ahead, Mr. Kluber. Do you have anything else you want to add? Councilor Crosby?
If I'm not mistaken, I think that's only part of the story of how the FAR was reduced. Are you not? Also,
yes, that's right. We
actually
reduced the footprint of the building on six inches all around, which achieved the final reduction down to 0.41 from 0.4435. So we did shrink the building. Actually, shrinking the building increases the setback by 6 inches on either side.
Admirable thing to do.
We do the best we can.
Anyone else from this? All right. Are we, Councilor Schwartz?
I was just noticing on the landscape plan here, is this part of the blacktop that's on the side near the abutting condominium, that's not a parking spot, right? That's a turnaround?
No, those are
on the bottom of the
turnaround.
That's what it looks like to me.
They're not deep enough for parking.
Great, because that was an issue before, and you guys moved the parking out of that side there.
Exactly.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have an opportunity, Mr. Gleba, to study the landscape plan? Since it came into
yes. While it shows where the potential area is, and the plantings are consistent with the previous landscape plan. Yes.
Okay. So the protected area, you're comfortable with the scope of the protected area?
Yes. Right.
And just so we're clear, absent a special permit, there'd be no restrictions on the use of that protected area?
That's correct, because there would be no opportunity to condition the project.
Unless, of course, they cause some upheaval of groundwater dispersal.
Sure.
Okay. All right. Okay. Anybody else? If councilors are comfortable voting on this tonight, we'll take it up. Councilor Schwartz, it's your ward.
I do, Mr. Chair. I mean, I think that we've had a lot of progress. If there's any legal issues or environmental issues that come up after the discussions with staff, I would hope that would be communicated to us before voting on Tuesday.
Well, if you're going to make a motion, why don't you make it subject to second call so at least we have the opportunity,
fine,
if it's not done,
okay,
to the satisfaction of staff. Mr. Gleber, Mr. Waddick, you can get in touch with me on Tuesday via email or phone, and there's a problem or you haven't had a proper opportunity to do your work, we'll hold it. Okay? So you have a motion, Councilor?
Excuse me. I do need to raise one more thing, and this is something I discussed with Attorney Morris before. The FAR calculation chart is not on any architectural plans. And if you suggested that sheet because of the plan that's cited in condition one. And it's not something we are comfortable with.
You're comfortable with it cited?
No, we think that the architectural plans that are cited in the order should have that FAR calculation chart on that plan.
That's
Mr. Chairman, it was signed and stamped, I would note, that's all.
Is there a problem?
No, it's not a problem putting that same information on the plan. It's not at all.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. Not at all.
Okay.
Councilor Schwartz, do you have a motion?
Point of clarification. So, what you just said, I think, is that you're expecting a new set of plans that have accurate dimensions and the FAR calculation on them.
Exactly.
Thank you.
And that's acceptable. Okay. All right. Councilor Schwartz, you have a motion?
Subject to second call, I move that we approve this.
Do you have a draft board order, Mr. Gleba?
Mm-hmm. Can I make one comment as well?
Sure, please.
So I think that this preservation mechanism is helpful because one of the things that was troubling me, and I think some of our colleagues, was that, you know, as the petitioner had pointed out at the last meeting, the argument for allowing more mass on the site was, or at least more units, was that the lot size could support it, but it's not a easy lot to build on because of the grade and the and topography. That's true, and I think that while that's true, that's probably part of the reason it's very difficult to build on that area that's such a high grade, such a low, you know, such a steep grade, and the trees, and so. And on the one hand, I think that, you know, that's a very rational reason to say we should allow this. On the same token, you know, there are lots in the city that have not been built on because of their topography and the difficulties of building in that topography. And to, so that's simply to be the rationale to always allow a more units or something like that is challenging, I think, as a precedent. So I think this is very helpful in my mind. It addresses that concern that I had, and I appreciate the petitioner for going to the trouble of doing this. Thank you.
Okay. All right. We have a draft board order in front of us.
We do. I'm not sure if we're going to go over the criteria for if we went over at the first hearing.
Sure. Why don't you do that, and then we'll go through the order.
Okay. So when reviewing this request, the council should inquire if you should consider whether the site is an appropriate location for the three attached single-family dwellings, whether it's an appropriate location for the retaining walls, four feet or higher in setback, whether the project is developed and operated will not adversely affect the surrounding neighborhood, whether there will be no nuisance or serious hazard to vehicles or pedestrians, whether access to the site is appropriate to the number and types of vehicles involved. Whether the area complies with the frontage requirements for attached single-family dwellings in the MLM district is impregnable due to the relationship beneath the location size, brick depth, shape, or grade of the lot. Whether such exceptions would be in the public interest or in the safety or protection of environmental species. So the same standards for both the setback building legal compliance of the setback requirements that there are now no longer parking spaces within 20 feet of the boundary line, but there is a driveway within 10 feet of the side of the lot line. And to apply those same tests criteria about the building that really complies. And there's the criteria. And we have...
Remind me, Mr. Gleba, if this was a two-family unit, this would be a by-right project under ordinances?
Yes, because it is 30% of the setback in other dimensional regulations.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Let's go to the findings. I don't think you need to read them out loud to us. Why don't we just take a look at them? Let's go to the first one. Any questions or comments on the first one? Second. Any comments there? Counselor, correct me, Craig.
Just the way it's stated, it might just be me, because steeply sloping topography and its difference in grade with abutting properties. And I think it makes more sense if you say, and its grade relative to abutting properties.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. 3, 4, 5 comments there. Okay, next. So let me ask you this. You're telling us, Mr. Gleba, that number 6, if this is a two-family unit, we would meet this requirement?
The two-family would still not have the 80-foot frontage.
So we would need a special permit.
I would actually, you know, it would be sort of the first time I had it on that.
Ms. Young.
So there was a two family on the lot. So there was nothing changed in use.
Well, it says little compliance with the 80-foot frontage requirement for attached single-family dwellings in the MR1 district.
Mm-hmm.
The requirement. So, if this was a two-family, would we still have that requirement to meet? I mean, the petitioner's presented this petition all along as something that I could do a two-family by right. If I do a three-family, you're going to impose a bunch of conditions on me. And I want to understand what we're voting on.
So, if it's already a two-family, they would have need for special permits.
Even though it was completely demolished and we're building a brand new structure?
From the perspective of building up and changing the roof,
if you could, Ms. Young.
What you're doing in that instance is what we saw at the Commonwealth Avenue site, which is you would need a special permit to extend or change the existing non-conforming two-structure use to a different one, but not, you wouldn't be getting a special permit per se just for the frontage.
But they have to, in other words, I want to be really clear here. If they came in and were looking for a two-family unit on this parcel, they'd still need a special permit?
If they have an existing non-conforming two-family use on this property currently, and it would be the same situation that we saw on Commonwealth Avenue where you have an existing two-family.
Which means they need to come in.
They come in, but they don't come in just because of the frontage.
No, I understand that, but they can't do the project without a special permit, which means we can condition it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that answers my question.
Mr. Chairman?
Yep.
If you don't mind, Joseph Porter, VGP Associates. The difference between Commonwealth and this project is Commonwealth is in an SR2 zone. This is an MR1 zone, so a two-family is an as-of-right. There was an existing structure there, so we could build an as-of-right two-family there. Because the difference is we're in an MR1 zone.
So what's the... there's actually an important point.
I'll feel corrected. I should not have jumped in.
No, that's okay.
Single-family residence, and it was a non-conforming use. And based on what Ms. Porter was saying, it's not a non-conforming use if it's in an MR district, multi-residence district.
So that we have 3 lots here, and we can build on all 3, even though one of them literally has no frontage. Is that what we're saying?
If the existing lot that has no frontage on it has a structure on it and they put another structure that's the same structure, same footprint, they could tear that structure down and replace it.
Okay, but right, I really want to, I'm sorry to push back here, but I think it's important because so much of what we're doing here is, or being asked to do is, well, we're being told that with the 3 units, we get a special permit, we have all these deed restrictions, very important, beneficial. And I want to know, if it was a 2-family, are you saying we would not be here?
Let me just be sure I understand the hypothetical you're talking about. You're talking about three lots.
My understanding is three lots. Am I correct, Mr. Gleba?
The owner owns the two above lots, yes.
There's three separate lots. One of those lots has no frontage whatsoever, so it's a landlocked property.
It does have frontage.
It has frontage.
It's still standing frontage.
So, Mr. Chair, if I understand your question, is it that just simply the frontage requirement, would that trigger a special permit in any case in this?
All I want to know is, We've been repeatedly told on this project, and in fairness, it's what I would do if I was in Ms. Attorney Morris's shoes. I can build this two-family in the rear by right and do none of these benefits by right. I need to know if that's accurate or not. If that's accurate, because in special permit land, we always think about the alternative.
I understand that's the reason why you're asking the question, but the question I just wanted to clarify for the legal department, I think that the question that you're asking them is not about the use, but more about the frontage.
My question is
whether that would require a special permit.
My question is, if this they came in and they built two units, not three, would they be going through the special permit process?
If that lot that has the non-conforming frontage has an existing one or two family structure on it currently, then under our zoning ordinance, they could reconstruct a one or two family structure on that as long as they didn't make that structure more substantially non-conforming. And the fact that it has insufficient frontage does not in and of itself make it more non-conforming.
Is this structure that they're proposing, if it was two units rather than three, would it be substantially more non-conforming than what was there?
Not in an MR district.
And what was there previously, Mr. Gleba?
There was a two-family house.
Much smaller, though, correct?
Oh, yes.
So why isn't it substantially different?
Because our zoning ordinance expressly states that the fact that a lot is substandard in either frontage or area and it's got a reconstructed one or two on it does not render that an increase in the nonconformity. We wrote that in because many of our lots are nonconforming as to frontage or area or both. And therefore, in order to allow flexibility for the reconstruction of those one or two families, Newton has afforded additional protections in terms of reconstruction of those types of buildings on substandard lots.
I must say, I appreciate that. I'll just offer the observation. I can't imagine that what the drafters of that ordinance were thinking about is this type of situation, but that's just my observation. It doesn't go any further. Okay. We have a motion. We have findings. Number six, any comments on that? Seven? Eight?
So, eight is in red. The person referred to the existence of three parking spaces in the side shelter. I believe they have been removed by the petitioner.
They're not in.
Those observations are really needed.
Okay, so we don't need it? Okay. All right. Nine?
Yeah.
Okay. Any other findings, Mr. Gleba? Okay.
Nope.
All right. Okay, we're going to. Any other conditions besides what's up here? I presume one of the conditions would be this proposed.
Yes, so John said there is a placeholder on the order that is handed out, and that would be added to. Oh, sorry.
Okay.
So that's the condition as proposed by the petitioner.
All right. Anything else? Okay. Any questions or comments by my colleagues? Councilor Schwartz? Sure.
Just on number seven, I just want to clarify, so the literal compliance, side setback. It's impractical due to the greater lot. If the greater lot is actually at the rear, right, the protection of the environmental features is at the rear. So just, that's why. So we're basically saying that because of the rear, it's not necessarily impracticable, but it's more not desirable. I mean, because I think the argument is that we're allowing a certain size, right, a certain number of units, because they can't build backwards.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe impractical might not be the right word. Maybe it should be...
So there is the standard.
What's that?
There is the standard.
That's the standard. What does impractical mean?
Come on, we have at least a couple of North grads here who can help us out. Go ahead, tell us.
Different from practical, right?
But
it's not doable. I thought that's
strange point, but I mean, you can build on a steep slope. You can. It would not be a practical decision.
It's not desirable for us as a policy issue in this particular case because the environmental features.
But it's not practical either. I mean, if we're trying to look at, okay, the reason we're pulling all the buildings up to the front of the site and the parking areas and everything you need to live is because it's not practical to build on the steep hillside if you don't have to.
Okay. Even though if you did it smaller, you might not have to go into the side setback.
I don't know that, but yeah.
Okay. No. I'll just
agree
to disagree on that one.
Okay. All right. So we have a proposed board order. All in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Any opposed? I will abstain. I for the record, I'll be really clear. I very much appreciate the restriction that's been offered by the petitioner. I am just continue to have a great difficulty with putting three large attached units in here, and I know that this was their right, but the idea that they do all this work first and then come in afterwards, I find... Sure. All set? Okay. I appreciate it, but I'm just going to note my continuing concern about this type of project. Okay, it's approved 5-0-1. We take it up Tuesday night, subject to second call, and if we're ready, we'll vote it out. If there's a problem, Mr. Waddick or Mr. Gleeble will notify me. They'll notify Attorney Morris as well, so he's aware of it. Okay?
That's not the chairman of the committee.
All right, thank you. All right, thank you all. Next, we have 63-17, special permit to allow a six-family multifamily at 16-26 Dalby Street, Dalby Development, LLC. This is in Ward 1. I know President Lennon is going to be here, I hope in a few minutes, but I am going to get this started. I do not anticipate taking a vote on this evening. So is this your project as well, Attorney Morris?
Yes.
Okay.
It is, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And we have somebody here from the city. Okay, good. Attorney Morris, have you read Mr. Daglian's report?
I just got it today, Mr. Chairman, and I have read it, yes.
Okay.
With me as part of the project team is our architect, Charles Calhoun, and our civil man, Mr. Vern Porter, brother of Joel Porter. And we're here to answer any questions, and I think we're prepared to address any issues that are identified in that memo.
Charles.
I don't have much of a speaking part in this, Mr. Chairman. You'll be happy to hear. It's our architect.
We always like hearing from your Attorney Morris, but it's
for the record.
My name
is Terry Morris. I've offices at 57 Elm Road, Newtonville, and I'm here representing Dalby Development LLC on this matter. And I've already identified the members of the team who are here, and I will turn the matter over to Calhoun.
Good evening. My name is Sal Calhoun. I'm the architect for this project. And I'd like to describe how we got to presenting this project tonight. What you're looking at on the screen is these three lots are the property that we're developing. The top one is a single family on a lot. There's a vacant lot in the middle, and then there's another building on the third lot. The property is surrounded by business use, multifamily. There are 12 units, 9 units. So if this would not be a different use for this neighborhood, the two buildings that are there are both two families. This is number 16, and that's number 26. And this is the streetscape, and that's 16 and 26. And you can see from the street that there's similar-sized buildings punctuated by not vacant lots, but a good distance between the buildings. Our concept was to design it so that we had 16 replicated and 26 replicated, so that from the street, which you're basically seeing, are the units that are there. This changed somewhat proportionally, but they're the same architectural style. And the idea was to try and make it appear as though this was one building, two buildings, although it's three buildings deep. These four units, 2, 3, 4, and 5, of a similar design, these two units. Sure, yeah. These four units are similar. These four units, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And then these two are what, when you drive down the street today, what you see in pretty much the same location are these two units. And our goal was to try and keep the streetscape very similar than it is today. We have a driveway that takes us under. Each unit has two parking spaces and its own garage or garage doors. And we were concerned about vehicles and seeing vehicles and seeing garage doors, so we decided to place the garages on the ground. Each underground. Each unit has a backyard, its own backyard, and there's a lot of open space. We're actually open space is higher than the than required, 70%. And we have a rendering of the way the property will look from the street. And again, this is very similar to the house that's there now, and this is very similar to the house that's there now. What we have is the garage in the middle, and then on either side of the garage we have walkways which take people deep into the courtyard. And the courtyard, this is the courtyard, has four entrances, has the unit entrances for 2, 3, 4, and 5, where these two units, okay, these are always going to be 2, 3, 4, and 5. The walkways are on either side of the ramp. Okay? And those walkways take you to the courtyard. Now this courtyard is the entrance for units 2, 3, 4, and 5. But units 1 and 6, as they are today, are still entered from Goldie Street. So essentially they look and act like single family houses as they are today. The original house, 16, was very close to the property line. And you can see that there's a fence there. That's how close it was. And there's an industrial building here, a garage, and there's all kinds of cars and different stages are being worked on. So one of our goals was to move off of that property line, and so this unit is further away and in line with the units behind. Again, it's our rendering, and that's a bird's eye view. And what this drawing shows us is that, you know, there's a lot of green space, a lot of open space, and we've gone to the trouble of doing landscaping, you know, a privacy screen because of this building here, and then low plantings in front of our wall to make it a gradual climb in elevation.
Am I correct that you've raised up the site or proposing to raise up the site by 5 feet or so to do all this?
In answer to that question, I'll let Mr. Porter answer. But I would say, as a preliminary matter, in Mr. Bragan's report, he says this is relatively flat. As the site itself, that is true, but what he doesn't note is that on either side, the properties on either side, we're in a bowl. My question's really simple. Are you raising the grade of the site by approximately 5 feet by putting all sorts of fill in?
Yes.
Okay.
So you're creating the garage here, just so we're all clear, by raising up the site, and that allows you to do all sorts of different things.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, that's all. Go ahead.
So, again, going back to the bird's eye view, it shows us that the buildings are in line and at the end from the street. What we're trying to have the effect of is the concept of the visual feeling of one building going back on both sides. And the space in the middle, which was the lot that was not built on now, is still primarily an open space going from the front to the back.
Could we see the rendering again?
Right.
Ma'am, I'm not going to take questions from the audience, okay? You can have an opportunity to speak. Okay, go ahead, sir.
So if I could finish and then I'll be glad to answer any questions. So if we go to the rendering, then again, what we try to do is to make these buildings feel as though they're one building off the street in line, keeping it the same proportions as they are today on Dolby Street. This is the engineer's plan, which I'll let him speak to. And this is the landscaping plan. We had an architect landscaper come in and design all the trees and shrubs that are appropriate for the site. And this is how the garage will work. There's a ramp, double car wide, so there's no waiting to come in or out. You're in and out same time. Every unit has two parking spaces under it. Garage doors in front of it. So this feels like a house. This is your house, this is your garage, going into your basement space that has stairs connecting you to above. At the end of this garage, this wall has a large vent at the back, and that allows the air to come through the opening in the garage and out the back, or vice versa. And that's because of any potential carbon monoxide. So that's wide open in the back, allowing fresh air to move through. The materials that we chose to use are terracotta, brick, and then grass around with planting. The buildings are all wood structures, probably hardy plank type of material. That's pretty much what.
Okay, thank you.
There are other architectural drawings, but unless you need to see them.
We don't. I think we really need to understand the essence of the project, and the architectural details are really not our purview.
Good evening, Mr. Porter.
Porter, Civil Engineer, the project engineer. I just wanted to go through some of the details that I've designed as part of this project. I did receive Mr. Daglian's memo. He starts to discuss, I think it was the ramp that he started with first.
Yeah, he's put the site plan.
Yeah, perfect.
That one's okay.
So, the first thing he had mentioned is the wall that's in the front of the property. You know, we have a wall that's right at the property line. And he asked that, you know, just for maintenance, if that wall could be pushed back, there's no reason why we couldn't do that. It actually might be a nice feature to maybe plant something in front of it so it would actually look nicer from the street. That wall was intended to be a height that was, like, sittable, like people could use it almost like a bench. But if it suits everyone that they want it back a couple feet, that's not a problem. We can do that. As far as the ramp, he brought up a question about the ramp. We use standard ramp design. Although it is steep, it's not as steep as you think. It's 15% in the middle, and it has two 10-foot transition areas. The transition area is a half the slope of the main area, and that's typical ramp design. Actually, ramps like this could be as much as 20% in the middle, so you could have 10% and then 10% for 8 feet, I think it says, and then you could have 20% and then another transition at the bottom that would minimum be 8 feet at 10%. Well, what our ramp is less than that. We have 10 feet at 7.5%, and then we have 20 feet at 15%, and then another 10 feet at 7.5%, which gives you a total differential of 4 feet. So that 4 feet also has to do with the groundwater. Mr. Daglian brought up the condition of the groundwater, and that's exactly why the building's designed the way it is. We're not going to be displacing any water underneath the building. Our groundwater is at 7 feet. Our basement floor is only 4 feet below grade. So from the basement to the garage floor to the groundwater, there's a 3-foot differential. We actually did that so that we could try to put some drainage in the basement itself, in the garage area itself. Mr. Daglian's report asked that we put in a water and oil separator and then discharge it to the sewer. If you'd like us to do that, that'd be great. That's my preference to do that, because it would be easier. What I tried to do was infiltrate it within that 3 feet, and it's actually difficult to do that. The soil conditions in that area are all the same. We did do one test centrally located on the site. I know in one place he says we did the test, and another place in the memo he says we didn't do a test. We actually did do a percolation test. We did do groundwater test. We did find groundwater at 7 feet in the center of the property. And it's actually at the lowest point of the property. So that groundwater is there. All the soil in the area is all gravel. So it's my opinion that there's...
Yeah, when you say 7 feet, is it 7 feet from existing grade or 7 feet after you build up 5 more feet?
It's 7 feet from the existing grade. So it's probably about 7.5 feet below the sidewalk is where the groundwater is.
Okay.
And our garage floor is only down 4 feet. So we've pitched it up so we can have that differential, so we don't have any issues with groundwater in the future. Building code says you need to be 2 feet above groundwater with a basement floor. We allowed 3 feet, so that allows us to have footings that won't, so we're actually constructing this. We're not going to be in the groundwater, so we talked about dewatering. The only time we'd be dewatering is to actually putting in those oil and water separators that he's talking about adding, and we would be fine with that. I think that is actually a very good plan, and I would welcome that. He talked about the 21E. This house has been residential use. I don't think there's anything you're going to find anything in the area that's there. He talked about additional testing. We've done testing in the whole, you know, I've done other projects in that area, but this site is completely coarse gravel. Groundwater is going to seek its level in gravel. It goes up and down very easily. We did test at the worst time of year, and there was clear seasonal high groundwater there, so we were able to establish that. And we talked about heating the slope. I mean, if that was a condition, you know, that'd be up to the developer, but I don't think it's necessary. 15% slope is, you know, it's not allowed in a street. I think the city requires 12%, but between 12 and 15, it's not a public way, it's a driveway. And driveways in this manner could be as much as 20%. So we think we're well below what is recommended and allowed. So I think it would be okay if it was a condition. It is going to probably be a concrete driveway. So if they wanted to heat it, it could be done. If that was a requirement, I think we could live with that as well. But that would be up to the developer.
Okay, thanks. Anything else?
No, I think everything else was okay. So I think we're
Attorney
well.
Morris, is there anything you want to add at this point? Oh, I'm sorry, Councilor Schwartz.
For Mr. Porter, I think that if I read it correctly, the planning department memo had suggested they were concerned about the height of the plaza, of the courtyard, and they were talking about lowering the whole project by lowering the garage a little bit. But you're telling us that you really can't because of the groundwater, right? There's 1 foot maybe, but other than that.
That's what's driving it out of the ground, the actual groundwater.
And what is the grade of the abutting properties? Do you know?
Well, in this case, the north, which would be the top part,
yeah,
is approximately our grade now. Yeah, it's about a foot higher. The back, this back corner is higher than us by about a foot and a half or 2 feet. This area here is the same. And this side it's pretty close to what, you know, this portion of our property is probably the lowest portion, and this is the same. So we're the same in here. This part's about the same, and it gets higher, more back here. This is probably a foot to 2 feet higher than us, and this is about a foot higher than us.
When you say that,
currently,
you're talking current conditions, not as built.
Yeah.
When you're as built, you're going to be the highest structure, and that water's going to flow away, right?
Yes, water is going to flow away, but we've pulled everything in so that we can collect that water. All the water from the roofs, the courtyards, and everything will be infiltrated, so In the end of the day, the runoff from the site will be less than what's running off now.
Because you're infiltrating everything, is that your plan?
Yeah. It's actually really good gravel. So all the Kultex we have, you'll see the Kultex pretty much all over the site. There's some here, there's some under the driveway here. We actually had some in the basement area here, and here. They're everywhere, and with the gravel that's there, they'll infiltrate all the water. So it won't be an issue.
Do you have anything else? All right. Attorney Moore, is there anything else?
Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We should point out that the unit sizes here are more in line with what the comprehensive plan is looking at. These four of these units are no greater than 2,000 square feet. Two other units are 1,800 square feet.
Does that include attic space?
That includes everything, Mr. Chairman.
Is there attic space here?
There is no attic space.
Is it a 6 foot, 11 inch attic?
There's no usable space above the second floor.
None at all.
That's correct.
When you do the calculation, the 7 miles.
That's not my question. Could you come on up, sir? And I understand how you design, and this is our ordinance, and so we bear fault with it, but the attic space, is it 2 feet, 4 feet, 6 feet, 5 inches, what is it?
Give me 1 second to look
sure,
at it.
Sure, please.
I don't know whose glasses these are, but I need them.
Here's my glasses.
If you want to take a couple minutes, we have plenty of other folks to speak, and we can get back to you, sir. Attorney Morris,
6'10.5".
6'10.5". Okay, well, I'm only about 5'9", a good day, so I guess I should be up there in a room. Okay. But I know what our ordinances provide. All right, Councilor Crosley.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to make some remarks before you ask the question.
Well, could I just ask for something? The one thing we did not get in the plan set is an attic floor plan. And I do see some dimensions drawn on one of your site sections, or it's actually an elevation, with some heights in it, 5 foot at one line, 7 foot at another line. If you gave us an attic floor plan showing potential ceiling height, you know, 7 feet or above, you'd get a long, skinny place, but it would be helpful to have that, because I'm not sure by looking at this that you don't have any area that has to be counted according to the calculation that we require.
That's the added plan, and that's showing the 7-5 okay. relationship.
Okay, we just don't have that in our packets.
I thought it was part of it. That was part of the whole package that I thought you submitted. I'm sorry if it's not here.
Maybe it's out of order.
You're going to speak. You just need to speak into the microphone,
oh,
please.
Oh, I'm sorry. There is one. There is one. So you have a 9'11" wide swath that is 7 feet high or more. I think, and I'll throw it to the planning department. I think by the way our ordinance reads, that's a countable area. But I'm going to leave it to you to get that. It's small, but it's an odd shape, and it's narrow and long, but I think if you're over a certain width, 7 foot high or more, that you're supposed to count it.
Well, there is actually three criteria. There are three criteria, and the one that is most commonly used is the 7-5, and what that means is that if you have an area of 5 feet high, and then you have an area of 7 feet, and that area of 7 feet is less than half the area of five, it does not count. And this complies to that.
I'm going to check that out. It's an interesting puzzle.
I'm
going to throw it to the planning department, because there's the code requirement for ceiling height where you are averaging, and that's different from how the FAR rule reads, which is about measuring
that. We're not
going
to resolve this evening, sir. I think our planning department, there's two things that are salient that seems to me came out. One is that we're talking 6'10" attic space. I know that's permissible under FAR, but I also think it's fair to note that whoever develops this property is going to tell people there's an attic room, because it's 6'10". That's going to be enough for virtually anybody to occupy, and I think we have to acknowledge that fact. And second, I think we have the second salient point is our planning department needs to follow up on what Councilor Crosley noted and get a definitive answer. There's a calculation, and we'll come up with the answer on that.
All right.
Is there something you want to add?
Yes, there is. There are a couple of things I want to add. First of all, the most obvious is that there is no FAR requirement. These are multifamily dwellings. They're not attached dwellings. They're not single and two-family dwellings. There is no FAR requirement. I would rather focus on some of the other dimensional controls, and that is the fact that now you have a requirement of side yard setback that has been increased to 27 feet on one side and 25 feet on the other side. The other thing, as I think our architect pointed out, it's close to 70% open space that's created as a result of putting all of this parking on the ground. This is a paradigm. This is a paradigm that the committee has seen before and dealt with, and it is a successful one. Now, the last thing I will say, if one were to go out to the site, you will see that essentially that this property is in a bowl. The one reason why there are retaining walls around is because on the left-hand side, the elevation is 2.5 feet higher than we are. On the back, it's 2 to 3 feet higher. Across the street, you'll see a retaining wall at 1719 Darby Street that's at least 2 feet high right at the back of the sidewalk. This happens to be the lowest spot in sight. That's why we raised the grade in addition to trying to get out from under that water table. That's all.
Okay. All right. Mr. Gleaver, do you want to give us a very, and I'm going to really say very brief overview, because I know there's a number of folks who have questions or want to speak, and I want to get to them.
Sorry, to be brief, the first relief is to allow a multi-family residential use in MLT district. The criteria are as shown, whether the specific site is in a proper location to propose multi-family dwelling. Whether that multi-family dwelling is developed and operated will not adversely affect the surrounding neighborhood. Whether there will be no nuisance or serious hazard to vehicles or pedestrians, and whether access to the site is appropriate for the number and types of vehicles and down. Those are the standard special permit criteria.
Mr. Grieber, could you just tell us what can be done by right here so we understand the differential between what's being proposed and what they can...
Well, one two-family home can be built on presumably the two lots that flank the middle lot, which I believe is undersized and not a buildable lot.
So let's just be really clear. The middle lot is a non-buildable lot, and as a matter of right, they could put two-family homes on the other two lots, and they're proposing, instead of building four units, to build six.
Yes.
Okay. Just want to be very clear what is permissible.
Not so.
Well, your position is not so.
These lots can be re-subdivided to create two 11,700 square foot lots, Mr. Chairman.
And so what would that get you?
The interesting thing is, when you go that way, the FAR increases.
It goes, how many units would you be able to put up?
You'd be able to put four.
Okay.
But they would be much larger, that's all.
All right. Just want to understand what we're talking about. Okay. Mr. Grieber, go ahead, please.
Okay. Then it seems to be this is an ideal design to say that there is to be a great building. The zoning would make the most of the zoning too, with business in California and for manufacturing to the west. Then this is for if a big mixed-use area with combinations of single and multi-family dwellings, commercial, industrial, and other uses. This is slightly showing the three lots, showing the existing homes and the two lots of the north and south and the both and middle lots. This is the site plan of the same area. So the elevations in the front and rear, where you can see the two structures, flanking both the courtyard above sea level and the entrance to the garage. And you can also see the rear of the garage in the middle of the bottom trim. These are the two elevations. These are the northern set of stairs. The top of the floor section showing the entrances to the low grade parking underneath each of the units. Each one of the garage door controlling entrance to the garages. To the bottom drawing is the view from the north.
Could you just, I want to make, colleagues don't mind, I want to make sure I follow it. When you show the garage doors there, are those the ones that are underground, or are they?
Yes, those are the underground garages that fit each of the units.
So you would not see that from the street?
So this is a clear section of the structure. So if you took the building and cut it in half, and this is what.
And there are interior garage doors for each of those units.
Yes. So you have the parking access, which is essentially underneath the courtyard building, each of the six garages, two on each of the two sides.
Go ahead, Councilor Schwartz.
Just one question I had on the garages is, especially the ones for units 1 and 6, it seems like that's a pretty tight turn off the ramp. Have you guys looked at the turning radius there to get into those garages?
We didn't go across the road by engineering. So I don't think it's a little tight. If you need to write it underground, in tight, so it's that combination.
I ask that Mr. Grieber, you speak with engineering directly about this.
Mm-hmm.
I had some similar concerns about the size here. All right, go ahead, please. I'm sorry.
This is the base, looking at the two units on the southern side of the structure. Again, the floor section showing the mirror image of the garages. And the bottom drawings is the south elevation of the building. This is the north side plan, 290 degrees. Driver's seat is at the bottom. You see the access to the garage in the middle. That's the ramp going down to the garage. And otherwise, you see the proposed trees and other shrubs. And the trees tend to be located both along Derby Street as well as the midpoint of the side property lines to the left and right, as well as some in the back rear corners. So, some photos, this is the existing structure of 16 buildings. Those come about the demolition delay until September of 2017. Next, this is the broken last, again, the 22 homes. This is 26 buildings. Again, going from north to south. The demolition delay on that was about. This is a view of the middle of broken mass, showing the context behind it. There is another room of dwelling behind, and 16 buildings is to the left. So, as you see, looking south from 16 buildings, and then the broken mass, and then 26 all on the left hand side. And this is a view from the street to the immediate east, the structure will be likely seen in the gap between those two pillars.
Okay. Alright, Councilor Schwartz, and I want to make sure we get time for public comment before it starts getting too late.
Sorry, just a quick question on the zoning memo. For the existing column, it doesn't talk about the current height of the current structure. Is that because it's not been calculated, or is it just not different structures?
It is not included. If I can scroll back.
Because I guess one of the concerns.
We have a storage structure. I can't ballpark, but probably somewhere in the high 20s, low 30s. But perhaps the petition would be more than that.
I guess the concern that planning raised was the height of the.
So the overall height of the project is the height of the proposed structure plus the increase in height.
So that 31.8 that's currently listed as proposed includes the 5-foot increase in grade?
No, that would be what this house currently is. So that is 31.3 above the existing grade.
Even though it's on the proposed column in the zoning memo.
The proposed, that is the structure above the proposed main grade.
I see. That does not include the 5-foot increase in grade. So again, the tower is 36 feet over wherever it is right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only question is whether that's significantly higher than what is currently. And that's what I don't know, what the current height is.
Yeah.
So, there is a representation by the petitioner that this lot is lower, but I'm not seeing that in this picture.
It doesn't vary across the lot. The whole thing is of the north end. The existing property is 16, which is a bit higher above the
footer, maybe a foot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. How many members of the public wish to speak this evening? Just a show of hands quickly. Okay. Why don't we start over here, and then we'll go around the room. We'll make sure everyone gets started. So, first row, come on up, please. Come on up, ma'am. Very simple rules. When you come up and speak, just please state your name, your address, and try to keep your remarks to 3 minutes or so. I want to make sure everybody gets an opportunity to be heard. Good evening, ma'am.
Good evening. My name is Penelope Papanugro of 63 Hyde Street in Newton Highlands. I don't live on Dalby Street, but I'm here for a couple of reasons. In the fall of 2014, some residents of Dalby Street sent application to the Newton Tree Conservancy, of which I'm a director, and they wanted to put trees in front of certain properties, and one of the properties was 16 Dalby Street, which has two trees, a cherry and a crabapple. Crabapple is right where you want to put the curb cut for the driveway, so no one. But presumably the cherry could stay if this permit goes through, if it was very well protected during all this construction. or am concerned about those two trees. And I'm also concerned because the assessor, according to the assessor's database, that vacant lot is undevelopable. Hard word to say. It sounds like, I mean, there's not a building going on top of it, but there's lots of development, and it's no longer open space, which is kind of a rare commodity, especially in this very dense neighborhood. So that's the questions I have.
Thank you, ma'am. Maybe our legal department, is there a problem because it's undevelopable?
I would presume that this is one of those double lot situations where the if those three lots were in separate and individual ownership, they would be all buildable. But because one of those lots is in common ownership with the adjoining lot, you've got lot merger going on. What you've got proposed is that all three of them are going to be combined into one large lot, and that's what's going to be developed, the single large lot.
Otherwise, they could develop two-family structures on the other lots, but the third lot could not be developed.
Yes, or they could do the recombination subdivision that Attorney Morris mentioned, which is to combine three into two.
Okay. And that's permissible under, just so we're clear, that's permissible under our code.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. All right, next please on this side. Anybody, come on up.
Mr. Chair, can I just ask one follow-up question to Attorney Young? So is the reason why it's undevelopable, because of the lot size itself? That's all it is?
The lot size coupled with the fact that it's not in single ownership. And you've got lot merger going on. When you've got two substandard lots, they'll be forced into a merger situation. Under state law, we've got some saving provisions, but not when that lot is vacant. So you've got a merger going on. But if they had all been in three separate ownerships, they would continue being all three buildable, even as substandard lots.
I see. Thank you.
Good evening, sir. Go ahead.
Good evening. My name is Stephen Weiner, 444 Dalby Street. I have a long history here in Newton. My parents and my uncle both graduated from the original Newton High School. I graduated from the second Newton High School. My daughter is currently a senior at the third Newton North High School. And my youngest daughter will be a freshman in the fall. But my point is I have a long history here in Newton. And we love Newton. We love the town. We love the quality of life here. Everything, the housing, the zoning, the garden city, moving on Dalby Street. We're right at the town line of Watertown, and we're concerned that I don't want to say, it's hard to even come up with the right word, but it's a little commercial. This area is a little bit neglected. It's just very trafficy. My question is, would you allow this kind of use on Com Ave or Newton Highland or Newtonville? Would you do this in any other part of a Newton village? And the plan, I feel that there's not a consideration. Well, if you can't put it there, well, why not put it over in West Newton? You know, nobody cares about Dalby Street. It's a little run down anyway. It's bad enough. Let's make it look a little bit better. Let's just put it there. And that's a big concern that I have. But we live there, and we value being in Newton, even if our address is not on Con Ave. The other concern that we have, last fall, with all of the rain that occurred, the flooding was horrendous, and that specific property was where a lot of the runoff went. It was like a floodplain. The water was up to my knees. I had to go running on, knock on the neighbor's door to let them know that their car wouldn't flood. We had to call the police. So that was just recent. There's a lot of flooding there. So this happened like 10 years ago in Newtonville, there was a huge flood. If you take this lot and you put it up to a 6 feet height, That's not going to improve the water situation in that area, and I really appreciate, our concern was, we thought it was going to be a commercial looking square building, and looking at these pictures, it's quite lovely, and I really do appreciate that. However, access to an underground garage is a big concern. Is it possible to develop something that is a little more reasonable access, maybe not so visible from the street? I missed a comment that the engineers talked about the slope of the garage. It didn't sound like, it didn't seem like that it would meet the ADA requirements for a grade. So I'm not a lawyer and I'm not an ADA official, but my concern about access, not just for cars, but for people, that it needs to make sure that it's ADA compliant with the slope and the grade of the garage access. One more thing. 4 or 6 units on one unit. We're concerned about how much traffic there will be on the street, how many renters will be there, and people who don't care about the environment is something we need to think about and we're thinking about anyway. So there's a concern about rental units. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anybody else? Anybody else from this side of the room? Wendy?
Hello, thank you for your time. I appreciate this. My name is Sabrina Dennison, and I also live at 44 Dalby Street. Thank you for giving us the time to talk. I don't want to repeat what Stephen said, but my concern, I have a big concern about so many units on an opportunity, on a lot of people. If it's a renter, if it's an owned units, that's fine, but I'm concerned about them being rentals with high turnover. Thank you.
Anybody else?
Thank you. My name is Wendy Poffer. I'm at 46 Dalby Street. I've been there since 95. I agree with much of what Stephen Sabrina have already said. I think it would be helpful for neighbors if we had some more information before the meeting tonight. I was trying to look for reports and renderings and all that stuff and could not find that. So I don't know if that's online, and if we could look at that, that would be great. The size of the 6 units looks very large in terms of what is already there now. The driveway, I believe, was said it was 2 cars wide, which is wide, so that's going to be kind of a big hole going into down below, where there may be a lovely courtyard in the middle, but that's a concern. And again, it's Dalby Street runs between Lordstown Street and California Street, and sometimes the traffic is way too fast and not safe. So putting 6 more units on that, and I guess just one last thing is that talking about 6 units and they each have 12 parking spaces. I'm not an architect, but that just seems like a lot of spaces and how is everything going to fit there. And I understand it sounds like they're moving units in and giving a little more room on each side for the courtyard, but we are losing the big open space in the middle. So thank you all for your time.
Thank you. Anybody else from this side of the room? I saw some folks over here. Let me start at the front. Come on up, please, ma'am, and we'll just move back. Good evening.
My name is Paula Batista, and I am representing my parents who live at 23 Dalby Street. They've lived on the street for over 50 years. I've lived with them as well, and I visit them quite frequently. And I agree 100% with Stephen with his issues. My parents would like a more simpler project, just keeping it as 2 buildings, 4 units. Why make it so large? It looks lovely, but it looks very complex. My other issue is the major flooding on that street constantly. I've lived there, as I said, over 50 years, helping my parents. And with the underground garages, it's going to be a huge problem with the flooding. So, more importantly, just keep it simple, nice, clean. Two buildings, four units, and no larger than that. And let's just keep it a neighborhood atmosphere and not so commercialized. There are multiple apartment buildings around there. Let's not add more apartment buildings. Let it be owner-occupied, two buildings, four units. That's it.
Thank you. Next, please, and anyone else? Come on up, please.
Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Megan Rodriguez. I'm a resident of 11 Faxon Street. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I would echo what we've heard from the other neighbors. Although I'm not on Dalby Street, this project is right behind, or right, excuse me, right in front of where I reside at 11 Faxon Street. The plans are very beautiful, but I'm concerned about a very large project. Currently, there are three units that overlook that open space. You're now putting back, unfortunately, that the plans call to push back that, and those three units are now going to be looking at very large buildings, so I'm not sure if they've taken into account some of that green space they're talking about, perhaps putting some of that in the back. But again, there's a huge concern from the Faxon Street. I realize we're a large building too, but we've been in existence since 1850. To see another large project in the neighborhood is a little disconcerting.
Thank you. Attorney Morris, have you had any kind of neighborhood meeting?
Absolutely, we did. My client basically engaged in some personal knocking on doors himself in advance of a neighborhood meeting that was attended by Councilors Ciccone and the President. There were approximately 10 residents there, including one of the people who spoke. So my client leafled the whole street, so we did have our neighborhood meeting.
That's helpful. Thank you for letting us know that. Okay, anybody else? Well, it's clear leafing of the street may not have gone to everybody. Sir, come on up, please. Good evening, President Lennon.
My name is
Sal. Your name and address, please.
My name is Sal. I'm in 90 Street. Just across the building. Okay, I see exactly the same concern the ladies here said. Yeah, everything is very dense, clean, air, green, and well, beauty products every day, and the flooding in the summer, and we see it all the time. So I don't know what the two buildings, I still don't know if it's a condo, apartment, or even rental. It's two units. It's a multi-family, or it's owner-occupied, or just you're going to be some rental property? Okay, that's my also concern. I'm not clean about if it is condo or apartment, is it rental only? Yeah. But
I think they've been marketed as a total of six units. Is that correct? Independent ownership, some kind of condominium or association?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the client has not made an ultimate decision. He's either going rental or sale, but I think ultimately his goal is for these to be sold, but he has not come to that final decision yet.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else wish to speak this evening? All right, we're not going to vote this tonight. There's a whole bunch of things I think our planning department needs to do in terms of talking to the engineering department in particular. Let me ask this councilor, are there any questions for the petitioner or questions or comments, really questions for the planning department to help focus our discussion when we take this up next time? Councilor Schwartz?
Just that height question that I had, just make sure that's one
yep.
thing. Yeah.
Councilor Lennon?
Sorry, I'm late. Mr. Chairman, I apologize.
You told me you were going to be.
I know. I apologize. Can you just very briefly just summarize what the issues were? We did have as I came in, some folks said that they weren't notified. And we specifically, the Ward 1 councils had asked that they had notified and leafleted the neighborhood were made to understand that that happened. We did have a number of neighbors at a community meeting on Saturday morning.
I think they at least leafleted the street. I don't know how far they went. I think there's been concerns raised about flooding issues, water drainage, the massing of the buildings in general, that these are large. And we talked for a while about what the by right alternatives are here, which is two-family structures, albeit somewhat larger units.
Right.
Okay. We also did discuss that the ceilings, or the attic space is about 6 feet 10 inches. Councilor Crosley pointed out there may be some portions of it that look like 7, and we have to do some FAR calculations on that.
I just wanted to go back over where we are.
Okay, so Councilor Schwartz, is anything else you wanted to ask for the planning department? Okay. Anyone else, Councilor Crosley?
Thank you. Given the what we're hearing about in terms of a lot of water collecting in this area, I do understand it makes sense how the petitioner is approaching the design and sort of raising the structures and so forth and staying above the water table. I think it might be helpful to have a little more narrative on that next time in lay language, especially, and I imagine you're going to be meeting with the neighborhood again, especially a way to explain to folks how this works, how it is you're going to be capturing the rainwater runoff and how you're going to be protecting the garage. There's a lot of people, obviously, despite your presentation, still concerned about how this site works currently versus how it would work in the future. And I know it takes a long time sometimes for that understanding to come forward, but also I think there needs to be some back and forth with the city engineer. The report just came today. I know that a lot of what he puts in his report is boilerplate, but and maybe there needs to be an amendment to it because that can, to the layperson, that can read like there's problems that haven't been resolved, and if those problems have been resolved, then that ought to be clarified, maybe by a Q&A or something. In the garage, I'm sure you want the garage to work. It's curious to me to have a garage built this way where each unit has a garage door, and I wonder if you can show the garage plan and show turning radius for the cars. I don't need to see it right now, but
we're not
going to
do it this evening. I think what we'd like is when you come back, and we're going to take this up again on May 9th. Does that work for you, Attorney Morris?
It has to. I know you're in budget hearings.
Well,
we're
practically live at City Hall in May, so.
I think that might be helpful too, and I know you have a trench drain down there and so forth. There's also, I believe I'm reading the basement plan and it's showing two levels in the garage.
No, I would point out one thing, and that is that there's the same standard that you would find in a conventional parking lot is 24-foot aisle width. That's the minimum that's in the garage. In some cases, it's greater.
I understand that, but you also have garage doors, and that makes it a different physical configuration. I mean, I imagine they're automated and so forth, but it narrows the way. If you could just, not now, but show that plan with the garage doors open, I guess, but that narrows the way to turning into the spaces. But there are two levels in the garage as I read the plans. It's showing four steps up from the parking area to a utility room, is it four steps down?
On the garage level, you do have a few steps up into the basement of the unit.
Okay, so I guess what I'd just like to know for next time is to clarify, because I know you're trying to raise the house just enough so that you can have parking in the basement. So then if you have four steps, that's going up at least 2 feet, if that's what you're intending. How is it that you can have a ceiling, a level floor on the first floor and go up 2 feet to the basement level and still have ceiling height? That's where your stairs up to the... I just would like you to clarify the ceiling height.
Okay, I didn't respond to
that. You understand what I'm saying? And the only other comment I want to make is You talked a lot about the stone wall circling the property. That it looks to me like it's 2.5 feet tall, and then there was some interest in from somebody to push the wall back further into the property and have some level ground, wider sidewalk area. But if you do that, I think the wall gets quite a bit higher. And so I want to understand exactly what you're proposing, if you are proposing to move that wall.
That wasn't our proposal. I believe it was the city engineer.
Okay, well, I heard Mr. Porter speak to it, so I'm not sure that it's a good idea is what I'm saying, and you already have some pretty steep grade going up from that wall to the level patio area and so forth.
What it would take away is the front yard. We would move the wall back at the same height. The slope would be the same. The front yard would just get 2 feet smaller, that's all.
Well, if it's, I'm not sure what 2 feet does for anybody. If it's only 2 feet, that might just be a strip that doesn't get maintained. I just want to suggest that that's something to give some thought to, and we don't want to create a condition that's worse than what you have here.
It was just a suggestion of the city engineer, and we were amenable to that or not.
Okay. I'm not sure what his rationale is. If we could just sort that out, maybe with the planning department.
Okay.
That's all. I'm not concerned about it otherwise.
You know, maybe we ought to have this. I know we don't have this segment here often, but this project seems to me might be worthwhile to have him here on the 9th. I'm going to see if he's available.
Or he can, Mr. Gleba can.
I think it might be nice to have Mr. Daglian actually come in and chat with us about this. Okay. Anybody else? I'm just going to note right up front that we seem to be struggling with a whole bunch of issues and problems here that are being created because someone's looking to do something that's different. I mean, none of these height issues, none of these drainage issues, none of the issues about the parking would be here, but for the fact that you're filling in the lot 5 feet and building 6 units here. I'm not suggesting how we're going to, at least how I'm going to vote on it, but I go back to this seems to be somewhat of a self-created problem. And again, I'm going to struggle with the benefit of what is the benefit of this project other than, you know, selling more units. And so I'm just going to put that out there. There's no need to respond to it. Councilor Lennon?
I just wanted to say that I know I came at the next hearing. I'd be prepared to talk about some of the benefits that we talked about, at least at the community meeting the other day. So,
you know, I
don't have to do it now. But.
No, I think it's, you know, that's really more subject for our debate. And I think that I welcome the opportunity to hear that. We certainly really didn't discuss that this evening, obviously, but I'm just noting that for the record. Okay, anything else? All right, I'm leaving the public hearing open. We will take this up on May 9th, at which time I think we're going to have some more answers from Mr. Gleba. Hopefully we'll have John Daglian here, and it will be my intent that evening if we're able to try to vote on the project one way or the other. Okay, thank you all very much. We'll see you all on May 9th. We have one more matter, colleagues.
Yours, and I don't think we're voting yes, Councilor Cody. This is 256-16. This is a request to extend the notification area of notice for special permit petitions. Councilor Cody, Norton, Harney, Glazer, Bluthal, Glazer, and Leary. Does our staff have some commentary here?
So I put this item on anticipating more information. I met with Law, thank you, Law and Doug Greenfield, the GIS systems administrator from IT today. Doug Greenfield says that, so there's two issues. There's the issue of creating either a system or purchasing a system that would allow for the noticing separately of abutters to abutters within 300 feet or to the neighborhood within 600 feet. The other alternative that we discussed was changing the actual legal notice to be more ambiguous, so it doesn't actually tell abutters or whoever's being noticed that they have legal standing, but we still need clarification on whether or not that's an option.
So let me, let me just offer an observation here, colleagues. I've chatted a little bit with our staff about this. I think the goal of providing more notice is admirable. I am personally very concerned about several things. One, the staff time that we're taking up here. Ms. Kahn's not going to complain, but all this stuff takes work, and I'm really concerned about that. There's a monetary cost here, but I'm also concerned about the legal issues, and if are we inadvertently creating some level of uncertainty in our notices, if we have some that are 300 feet, some that are 600 feet, what benefit are we really trying to derive from this? I think, Councilor Cody, this is your initiative, and the concern was that some people apparently did not know of a project, and this is a way of getting the word out. There's a balancing act here. I'm going to open it up for discussion, but I have those concerns. I'm very worried about tinkering with the system and then creating something where we might have some problems. So go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Those are all valid concerns. I know when this was first put together, it was probably about a year ago now, I talked to David Olson, and we went back and forth about this cost and everything. And the big concern was, and I'm not sure if it pertains to tonight, but we heard tonight some of the folks saying they hadn't heard about this project, they didn't need more information. So I know it didn't delay us this evening on that. However, some of the projects that were the guiding force behind this were like the Newtonville storage facility, which the housing was outside, most of the houses were outside of 300 feet. And because of that, we delayed the meetings a few times, and we did the same thing with Modern Bar. So we had a few cases that were not residential in nature, they were more commercial oriented, but the residential people were more inclined to be involved at that point because they're commercial entities. So then when I went to the various ward councilors, they were all like, yes, 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 and asked the details, and they waited for David Olson's response. They saw the cost structure and the legal concerns. Everything came out. It wasn't so when this was put together with all those folks on it, it seemed like a good decision by everybody that let's move forward. Technology changes. The fact that IT might have to go in and find some kind of a program or something, that, it's kind of the cost of doing business in a city to save us a lot of, grief for residents, transparency on projects, and just in general information for people.
So, Ms. Young, you had some concerns about creating some legal issues here. All right, well, Mr. Waddick, then you could address our legal concerns.
With respect to what we're doing now, Mr. Chairman, we're not exactly following the law as it is because we're not using an abutters list that's been certified by the assessors, number one. The other thing is we're actually notifying more residents than we're required to under the law, because under the law we're only required to notify abutters and abutters to abutters within 300 feet. The program doesn't allow us to do that in an automated way, so we notify everybody within 300 feet or a lot touching the 300-foot line. So we're actually notifying in excess of what's required by the law currently. So it's not that we could, expand. It's a question of whether or not it can be, how it can be facilitated through automation for the clerk's office, whether we go to a uniform notification so that we don't have to have two different notices going to the folks. We go to one notice and make it clear that we could put language in the notice that if you're not an abutter or an abutter to an abutter, then the notice is provided as a courtesy, basically. Something to that effect. But we're going to have to explore different options and make sure that we don't deviate from what we're required to do under the law. But it may be doable. It's just a question of how much manual work is going to be
needed as opposed to whether it can be fully automated?
Let me suggest this. I don't know if I speak for others, but I see no reason to have a two-tier system. That just creates, seems to me, is fraught with difficulty. Whatever standard we're going to do, we should just do. But I'm hearing from you, Ms. Khan, that you're not really sure yet what's involved with this. Is that right?
That's true. Doug Greenfield is going, he's not able to quantify yet cost or time.
Okay.
He did say that it would either require him to develop a program or to purchase a program that would require extensive training of staff. So he thought that that would be a burden.
Councilor Cody?
So these are some good comments to hear back. So what I'm getting out of from Attorney Waddick's position is we're already notifying people that actually don't have legal standing anyway. Right? So if we just add people in that 600-foot range and put in there a disclaimer saying you may or may not have legal standing, please check with planning, I think that could probably cover, since we're already doing...
I don't want them to check with planning, but maybe something you suggested, only abutters, if you put in the notice,
right,
only abutters or abutters or abutters have standing.
Yeah, and I think that solved the problem of doing the 600 feet out.
Councilor Schwartz?
I'm sorry if there was a memo on this, but I might have missed it. But legally, is there a concern that we're creating some kind of right? Because I don't think we can do that just by notifying. It's more the confusion that you're worried about, that people might come to the hearing thinking that because they got a notice, they have a standing, even though that would come out later if they tried to take some kind of legal action. They'd be told you don't have standing. Why would it affect how they act during our hearing?
Well, I think counsel, we create confusion as it is, because right now, with the way we're doing it, by notifying people, residents that aren't necessarily required to be notified, they think they have rights. And I know Attorney Young is dealing with that in a case where, you know, there may have to be motions to dismiss certain parties because they're plaintiffs in an action that they probably don't have standing, but they think they do because they've been notified.
That's the basis for them thinking that they have standing, just the notice that they got?
The notification doesn't give them standing. That's really a legal issue. It's presumed to be an aggrieved party because they're within an abutter or an abutter to an abutter. But even, you know, there's still a legal standard beyond that to prove that they're aggrieved, to show that they're aggrieved. So,
is it not adequate to put a pretty clear disclaimer on these notices, even for abutters of abutters, maybe they don't have standing? I mean, right? Not adequate, at least not in practice. You're saying practically people then get the impression that they've got standing, and then it's a long effort to prove that they don't,
we're not indicating that they have particular rights or indicating that they don't have particular rights. We're just notifying them in accordance with the law without making a representation one way or the other. And even if we do it, is it necessarily binding? Because it's standing is not really our determination.
Right. No, I didn't think it was. So it's just that it'll create more confusion as a concern.
Yeah, but what Barbara's saying is that under the statute, if you're in a butter to an abutter, you're in a butter or you're in a butter to an abutter within 300 feet or you're across the street within 300 feet, you are presumed to have standing. What that does is shift the burden of proof at the get-go. So what you now have, and the way it's set up in court, there are many judges who will not let you bring a motion to dismiss at the get-go after you've done depositions in order to show that there is no actual damage and you can rebut their presumption. They'll make you go to trial and what you've done is you've just stretched out the process any number of months, if not years, by apparently conferring standing. And that's exactly what's happened in the storage
special permit where two abutters, who are not abutters to abutters, but were within 300 feet, received standing, and they are looking to the statute, arguing that since they were on that notice list, they are presumed to have standing.
And I take it then, of course, the problem is even if you win down the road after 2 years of discovery and you win a trial, it's been a 2-year delay in the project, and that's the driver, unfortunately, a lot of times, in, as we know, in land use cases where the appeal delays things, and that causes hardship, and that causes desires to settle, and all sorts of other consequences.
It does, and I think there was a very good step that the council took when it added the actual requirement that there be a physical sign placed on the frontage of these properties, because, in fact, it's not uncommon for people to be on that mailing list and say they didn't get the letter. No matter what you do, there's almost always someone who says they didn't get the letter, no matter how big the list is. So that physical sign, I think, is an important aspect of noticing for the neighborhood.
So we can't ask on this tonight. We don't have the information from the time. When do you think you'll be able to?
We can do that.
And you'll let me know we can advance. If it's not ready, we won't take it up. I think at some point we need information, and at some point we ought to vote it. We're each going to have to exercise our judgment on that. Okay, anything else, folks?
We're going to adjourn. Thank you all very much.